Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
You know, rarely does this happen, but so I think both the aha and the ha-ha are similar in what we'll be discussing.
Oh, wow. And
given what's going on in this world, especially in this country, and especially in Wisconsin, it makes sense. But anyhow, all right, so are you ready? I'm going to pull up a drum out. Okay. All right. One, two, three.
A super salute to the NBA players who are using their power and position to keep reminding everyone that black lives matter and that black people keep dying. That's an aha. There's a viral video showing white patrons in a DC restaurant with fists raised, harassing and verbally strong-arming other white patrons to put their fists in the air to join in a Black Lives Matter chant. Of course, if just one of those harassers had been black, this would not be a ha-ha. This would be a very different story, and it would have been featured on the RNC tape, but since it's white folks, let's just say.
That's a ha-ha.
Ha-ha. Ha-ha.
Play it. Did you see that video?
Yeah, I did.
So these white patrons in a DC restaurant are really, like, harassing these white folks. You got to put your hand in the air. Put the Black Lives Matter.
Black Lives Matter. And people are like, but what about my minestrone soup?
Right. My vichyssoise is getting cold.
much funnier than minestrone. Yes.
So I thought it was cute. And I said, what's wrong with this picture? I'm like, if anybody there had been black.
Yeah.
It would have, first of all, they would have called it a violent protest.
Yeah.
Right? It would have been a violent protest. They probably would have gotten arrested. Who knows what would have happened after that? But, you know, love allies, by the way. Love folks are allies. I hope they went back and, you know, try to change their families' minds and everything else. But I was like,
but not now.
Yeah.
Now, you know, there's splaining and then there's oversplaining.
Mm.
These people were in the midst of having their little family dinners and getting out, you know, after being cooped up all this time. And then they have to explain that they are in favor of Black Lives Matter. They just don't want to interrupt their dinner to do it. And who are you to tell me to do this? And spitting, and this is what we're fighting against.
There was a dramatic lack of masks, weren't there?
Yes.
There were a dramatic lack of masks. I'd forgotten about that because I was
And the other thing is, I want people to join the movement. I like the fact that white folks are doing it. People of other colors are understanding what Black Lives Matter is all about. I just don't want them to take away from the message.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the message: is we're being jerks to make you come over to our side. This, as if the murders, the shootings of our and the strangulation of our men and women is not enough to make people come over to Black Lives Matter.
Yeah,
it got to have you, you know. Step into Roy Rogers, interrupt my chicken dinner and tell me, you know, that I've got to raise my fist. And you know what? And the other thing is, they would not have gone to Ben's Chili Bowl and done that. They would not have gone to Ben's Chili Bowl in Washington, D.C. and made people raise their fists in support of Black Lives Matter, of the white folks that love a half smoke.
But because then again, kind of everybody in Black Lives Matter, but everybody in Ben's Chili Bowl probably would have done it anyhow. Yeah, they would have been like, "Why y'all telling us to Black Lives Matter? We are Black Lives Matter."
Because Ben's Chili Bowl is right in the hood. It's really, I mean, it's infamous for you know their half smokes. right, Mr. Cosby?
Kool-Aid.
And it's right next to, what is it, the Lincoln Theater? And you have the wall mm-hmm. of honor and all these great people are on there and stuff. It's historic in the African American community in D.C. as well as elsewhere. So. But my problem, I just don't think that they are getting to the point of, you know, why we need their support. This is the way to make it happen.
They believe that marching and asking people to put their hands up is the allyship, and it is not the allyship. It is learning, it is doing, and it's not just chanting.
We've got other things to talk about in relation mm-hmm. to Black Lives Matter, but I want you to talk about something else that is a once in a lifetime thing. It is so 180 degrees away from what we know as Sotheby's, the auction house. And now there is going to be an auction of the items that belong to Biggie Smalls, right?
Yes, the crown and other items from what people believe is his last photo shoot in 1997, days wow. before his untimely death, including a crown that was in the famous photo shoot, King of New York, that is mm-hmm. up for auction, expected to grab $200,000 to $300,000. Also up for auction are love letters written by Tupac Shakur when he was in high school to, I believe her name is Karen Foy. Karen Foy, I believe, is the name.
Does Jada know?
So I'm sure, pretty sure Jada is aware, but that was not an entanglement she was willing to get into.
Yes.
Something about Sotheby's, erudite, stuck up, something about Tupac and Biggie being on an auction block doesn't work for me.
No. Yes.
Just doesn't work for me. Just something about that just is it doesn't work. I should look at it, probably look at it. So now, you know, like other artifacts, and they still mm-hmm. sell stuff from, you know, the Victorian era and everything else. And that's what auctions are. So it's a cool thing that hip hop is, I hate to say risen to that level, but that, because that has implicit bias in it, but it's gotten to the level where it can be valuable. There could be items that are valuable at auction. I just don't like the idea of Tupac and Biggie on an auction block. That's it.
I get that. And so if you were to reword it, what would you call it? How do you eliminate auction and block?
I don't know. Items for sale. How do you want it? how do you feel? I got some love letters from Karen Foy and Day for real. I don't know.
So what are you going to buy?
The crown.
Okay.
I'm not going to buy the crown. I'm going to get a fake one made in China.
Let me get that for you for your birthday. Because you're our king. You are our royalty.
I appreciate that.
Okay. So let's talk about let's talk numbers. In the coronavirus pandemic, the numbers have, and especially in the United States, have accelerated at such an exponential rate. It's frightening. The United States has more coronavirus cases than many countries have people. Did you hear that? More coronavirus cases than many countries have people. Over 5 million confirmed cases in the United States. People have been infected in the United States, 5 million over. Then the total population of countries like Ireland, New Zealand, which I believe is a continent, Panama, Croatia, Jamaica, and a number of other countries. United States has had more confirmed cases and more deaths from the virus than any nation in the world. Over 163,000, and we're past that in the U.S. Several other countries had a higher death rate per capita, according to the Johns Hopkins University data. California and Florida have had over a half a million cases, while the totals in New York and Texas are not far behind. New York, a major hotspot early on in the pandemic, right there where you were, has managed to flatten the curve and reduce the spread of the virus, even as numbers keep climbing in many other states. Hello, Texas. The number, total number of deaths from coronavirus in the United States could hit 300,000 by the end of this year. That's according to the former head of the Food and Drug Administration. We're looking at 180,000 deaths right now.
And so remember this when you go to the polls, right? Remember this when you watch the RNC, because what they're trying to do is gaslight you. They're trying to make you believe that if the virus had not come from China, it never would have gotten here, right? Well, Trump keeps talking about how he closed down the U.S. to China, like that's a big deal. Now, I will say, he slowed the spread by doing that, so kudos. But my challenge is, he's trying to make it seem like the virus never would have happened if he hadn't closed down the border, or you know, it was going to come here. It was going to. Now, the challenge is, given the numbers you just recited, he's done nothing of value to prevent it once it's here. But he's trying to get everybody to think about, no, forget what's happening once it's here. You know, it's just, I closed down China. He's been saying this consistently in almost every press conference since the close down. That's 6 months ago.
Yeah.
And so I just don't be fooled. Yes, closing down China was a bold move. That's fine. But the challenge is, he's done nothing. He's done nothing since it's been here, except hope it's going to go away. The amount of
I disagree. He has given stockholders of the pharmaceutical company that make hydroxyquin, the numbers have gone through the roof.
Touché.
The numbers for bleach, the numbers for all of these other ridiculous things that people are trying. And he and Mr. Pillow have upped the ante on the oleander market for this ridiculous drug that Mr. Pillow has said, who is a big major Trump supporter, has said is the cure for coronavirus.
Oh, the guy who runs, what's it called? MyPillow.com?
Yes. Mr. Pillow. Yeah. MyPillow.com.
Mr. Pillow. Right. I was like, I don't know Mr. Pillow. Yeah. I'm looking up. Yeah. Mr. Pillow. Yeah.
Sounds
like a criminal on a Batman.
that's what his workers must call him. The MyPillow. I'm sorry. What he has done is he has enhanced the stock portfolios of his friends.
True. I stand wholly corrected. Absolutely.
No, but you know, the frustrating thing, Steve, is, you know, we know this, and yet there are millions of people, hundreds who are in that convention center right now, who would just give us, you know, the old single finger salute and, you know, say, get out of here, because our president has saved us from this China virus.
Because they want to believe that, and they want to believe that their vote did not go to waste 4 years ago. You're going to run into a lot of people who are going to vote for him again, I'm afraid, because they want to say, well, I don't want to be wrong. Like, we as people hate being wrong, and seeing what Trump's doing, you got to dig yourself out of that pit before you can even see above ground again. And I'm so afraid people are going to go in there and vote for Trump because they did so the first time and they don't want to be wrong. It's a horrible reason to do it.
Well, if they didn't have enough reason this week by watching the Republican National Convention, and the ridiculous that has come out of people's mouths. Including his own family.
Wait, are you counting Melania as part of his family? Just want to make sure. When you say that,
you know what? I'm not sure if she wants to be included in that. As we're recording this, three of the four adult children have spoken thus far. I think his little angel, Ivanka, he's saving the best for last with her. But the production value of Melania's appearance, her speech from the Rose Garden, I thought was pretty good. And just for that. But here's the one thing that did come out of her speech. She is the only one to sympathize and empathize, even if it's just words, but sympathize and empathize with the people who have been affected by the coronavirus. Mm-hmm. You have not heard that at all.
Yep. And she wouldn't call it the communist China virus like everybody else did. She wouldn't do it.
She was like,
coronavirus. I think she called it coronavirus. Everybody else is called the communist China virus.
And Steve, there was something else you pointed out that she said about the president of your country or something like that.
Yeah. She said the president of your country. I'm like, hold on, hold, player. Now we get to how you really feel. Mm-hmm. Something about like your, you know, something like, how much I love your country. Like, no, you're an American citizen. You just talk about how you go vote.
Exactly.
Let's be honest about this. This speech that Melania gave last night was just so she could get more paid in the divorce decree. Let's be clear.
Because she's back. You're right.
This was all about like, look, Melania, I really love you to speak. Donald, I want more money. I must have more money. I'm only sticking around. If you get 4 more years, it's going to be a problem. Mm-hmm. My Slovenian accent is horrible. Sounds like Colonel Klink, actually.
Well, the same word, certainly. Well, nothing.
No, nothing.
That's Sergeant Schultz. I'm sorry.
True.
And the fact that we know this about that. But yeah, so it's
also brought drugs in America. Then she brought drugs. Like drugs in America, like, oh, drugs are important now. Got it. Oh, okay.
Yeah. And you know what I love? She is committed to be best. She is committed to the one of the most ridiculous titles for a program. Be best.
All right. Can we talk about one more thing? What does be best mean? What does be best mean? Like, I understand what it means in but why does she mean it? Best? Like,
she brought it from the old country, and we're not sure. We're just not. I don't know. I know. You know, usually your parents, when they send you out and they say, be good, be nice, be polite, be home before midnight. She got be best lamb chop. And so I don't know. I don't know. But you know what? It makes as much sense as anything else that has come out of that administration. So.
Oh, and before we move on, can I talk about Uncle Tom's Cameron? One of my favorite books when I was younger, Uncle Tom's Cameron.
You know,
Daniel Cameron, Attorney General for Kentucky. You know, the state that still hasn't taken any action on the murderers of Breonna Taylor. You know, the same guy responsible for the decision of what's going to happen. Now, we've talked on the show about, you know, if the cops are arrested, will they be convicted? We've had a very lovely conversation about that, but what bothers me is that he hasn't mentioned really her name in public. And what he was used as was a puppet for the Republicans. Let's be clear. He would not be on this stage had Breonna Taylor not been murdered, right? No one's looking for the Attorney General of Kentucky. But since he's been in the news, and since he's held the Republican line for so long, and since he's so ambitious,
Mitch McConnell's boy, and I do mean boy.
Yes. So for them to get up there and say, like, the family, invoking the name of Breonna Taylor's family and the widow of David Dorn, the policeman who was shot in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. St. Louis, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Was vile. Was just simply vile. At some point in time, you got to say, nah, I can't do that. But that clearly is not true with Daniel Cameron. This is the most disgusting thing. And there's a lot of things been disgusting. It's the most disgusting thing so far.
I agree with you. And I have not been a fan of his for, you know, a very long time. But he has really shown you know, like Maya said, when they tell you who they really are, believe them, or who when they show you who mm-hmm. they are, believe them. He has, whether it is having that engagement party while, you know, people were protesting and the city of Louisville was going to hell, and that family was just suffering. So I don't have a lot of, but you know what, Steve, and I don't know if you have this same feeling, but does he not remind you of those kids from school who were, you know, the you know, straight arrow, ram, you know, like a steel rod up there, you know, what's this? And tell you just watch out. I'm going to be, you know, president of Sigma Chi one day, and I'm going to be, you know, the first black attorney general. And you're like, nah, you're not going to just, but damn it.
So, but here's it. So the answer to that is yes, 100%. It's the it, and what I juxtaposed that with was our forever president Barack Obama, who was the same thing, right? He fashioned his life early,
yeah,
and to be like, I'm going to be the first this, but I'm never going to lose my connection to the people while doing it,
yeah,
right? I'm going to do it while staying connected to my people and make that climb. But the way I'm going to do it is like, ain't no women coming out the woodwork saying like, oh yeah, I had a tryst with Barack Obama. Like nobody, like that's never going to happen.
All right.
This, it feels like, and I don't know him. I don't know him from the next guy I run into in at Stop and Shop, right? I don't know, but everything about everything I've seen makes it seem like, and we've all known people like this who's running away from his, we'll call it his heritage. Mm-hmm. Right. He wants to get to it by distancing himself from his heritage as opposed to by embracing it like our forever president, Barack Obama. That's the difference. I got no problem. People want to be the first and they have all this. And if you don't want to be all up in the heritage, that's fine. But don't feel like you're going to don't be like you're going to run away from it. That's the feeling I get. And maybe that's why it affects me so much. Like, I think I said this before, Adolf Caesar and Soldier Story would have.
You know what? Adolf Caesar's great granddaughter could do that with this little guy. But here's how he could have even just gotten a little bit of a love connection or at least a mental connection with me listening to his speech last night. If he had said, my parents owned a barbecue shop on the south side of Louisville. I know, you know, and so they owned a coffee shop because everybody wants coffee. And it's like, dude, oh, dear God. Stop it. But I don't want to laugh because he still has not done right by Breonna Taylor's family. And I want him to make some sort of move and not wait till the very last minute before November 3rd to do it.
I'm going on record saying that I don't believe that. I don't think they can convict the cops, but you got to communicate. You got to somehow make a decision. And if your decision is to not do it, do that. If you're investigating, keep people updated. But you can't. You can't just not do anything. And then go say her name at the RNC. Oh,
right. Let me tell you what made me proud regarding, because we have not given enough conversation about, we're going to talk about Jacob Blake. But let me just say how proud I am of the men and the women of the NBA, the WNBA, and even one of the teams in the Major League Baseball, that is Milwaukee. Was the first team to say, we are not going to be playing in this playoff game, and we are protesting in honor of and paying tribute to Jacob Blake. So they said that. The NBA came back. The NBA, the organization, came back and said, you know what? We're with you. We're going to postpone all the games tonight, and we're going to stand with you. It was not only the Milwaukee Bucks. It was the five other teams that were scheduled to play in these games. And then Major League Baseball, the Milwaukee Brewers said, you know what, we stand with you as well. And all along, as changes have come about in the NBA, as far as Black Lives Matter and all of these things, the WNBA has been moving at a fast pace to take a stand and tell us and to talk about the injustices that are being wreaked upon our people. And all of this is the result of a shooting that took place this weekend, in which a 29-year-old man was called to break up a fight between two women. He had in his car three of his children, little boys, like eight. One was celebrating his eighth birthday, maybe six and five, right? Or three. And so he went to break up this fight. He gets back to where the kids are and gets them in the car and what have you. And what we can see is, as he is looking in one side of his car, he comes around the front of the car and tries to open the driver's door. By this time, at least two cops are on him. One is grabbing his shirt to stop him as he is leaning into his car. And the same one that's grabbing his shirt shoots him at point blank range. Why do you hold onto a shirt and shoot? What is this? And shot him, what his father said, there are like eight bullet wounds in his body, all in his back. And that is why he is now paralyzed from the waist down. Yeah. That's a miracle unto itself. That he's paralyzed from his waist down. This could have been from his neck down, right? He's had numerous surgeries. They have had horrific, what started out as peaceful marches and now nights of violence in the, it's Kenosha is such a lovely, sweet little town on the lake in Michigan. It's about 40 miles south of Milwaukee. And these things have grown out of control. His parents have come forth. His mother is asking for peace. Please, you know, just please, my son would not want all of this violence. His father was headed to the march, the George Floyd march, keep your knee off our neck march. He was headed there from Charlotte. He had to divert his trip to come and see about his son. They share the same name. They're both Jacob Blake. Now, last night, another night of violence, and now white militia members are getting involved. They're going to protect the property along with the police. They stand lockstep with the police. And one man, especially with a semi-automatic rifle, goes after people in Kenosha, and two people are killed, one is wounded, and one of the young men has been identified as white, who has just been, you know, say he is the total, when you think of peace and love, there's this young man who was killed. And the kicker to all of this is that this militia kid is a 17-year-old white boy from North Illinois. And wait. No, that's not the kicker. When the black people and the protesters were trying to tell them about the kid that got away, the police stopped them to get their identification because they were black. And they let this white boy get away.
Just go. Get away. Look, it's I'm one of the more optimistic people that I know. Like, I really am. This one's gotten me in a way that I'm not sure how this is going to come out. I've said a number of times, and it started off as a joke, but it's clearer as we get closer. You will know what country you live in November 3rd or November 4th. You will know what country you live in if people respond to these protests in the street by saying, yeah, we need former use of Trump, a person who never ever has really faced head on what the protests are about.
Yeah.
Right. If you're willing to just deal with the results of the protest as opposed to the root of the protest, mm-hmm. and that's the country you live, you know what country you live in. I'm trying to be optimistic Kamala gave me a boost last week, a huge boost. But Jacob Blake, prayers to family, anyone dealing with that, and anybody who was in the front lines of the protest, trying to make change.
And let's think about his little boys who saw mm-hmm. this, yeah. were in the car, one of them celebrating his birthday that day. These are things that people don't think about, but we, and as you say, those who are on the front line, how they get up every day and go back and do this, mm-hmm. I'll never know. I don't know. Yeah. But here is an opportunity for us to get some insight in mm-hmm. this, and with our guest. LaRonda Young is a former police officer and now is an educator. So LaRonda, thank you for joining us. And can you tell us, can you educate us? We need you, LaRonda, mm-hmm. because we have so many questions about what's going on in the minds of the police and what's happening on the streets and from your perspective. So thank you very much for joining us, first of all.
Well, thank you for having me. Before I say anything, I want to say my prayers are with Mr. Blake mm-hmm. and his family during this time. And I'm going to be honest with you. I'm questioning what's going on. I think the officers were totally out of line. You said something earlier about the officer grabbed his shirt mm-hmm. and still shot him. And that is where I have a problem, because I'm trying to figure out, why didn't they use what we call open hand control rather than going straight to their weapon? I'm not understanding that. If you can reach out and grab a man, then put him in a hold if you need to put him in a hold. But to take your gun out and walking behind him with his gun, I mean, they walk behind him for a few steps, pointing their weapon at him. When a person is walking away, they are no longer a threat. So if he was that threatened, he could have stopped, took cover, did a whole lot of things other than walking behind this man with his gun out. So there were many things that could have happened ways that he could have handled that without shooting this man. And I'm baffled by it personally.
So do you think it was because I've looked at this and I've had lots of arguments with people around this, because I always want to give everybody the benefit of the doubt, including police officers. And the only mm-hmm. way that I could see this was possibility, because the video turns on after this already altercation. Do we believe, number one, that they did not know whether he might have had a weapon, and that's why they didn't tackle him? And two, once he opened the door of the car, I'd like to know what would have gone through your mind once he goes to the car, obviously ignoring orders or ignoring what the police are saying, and reaches in a car. I would love to know what your thought is, especially behind that.
Okay, well, let's back up, because like you said, he basically was telling him to stop, and he was refusing to stop. Mm-hmm. If he did not know if he had a weapon, he could have, again, gotten a little more forceful with with his commands. There were three of them, if I'm correct. Am I correct?
Yes.
Were there three officers? Because I saw three officers in that video.
Right.
So if there were three officers, even if you don't know whether or not he has a weapon, you don't see a weapon on him. So at that point, you're always going to be a little heightened when it's a domestic violence case like this was, and you're going to ask him to stop. And if he does it, you've got three officers there. You're still going to use open hand control, or they could have went with the taser. Now, I read somewhere, and I'm not sure, correct me if I'm wrong, that they attempted to tase him and it didn't work. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So they attempted to tase him. It did not work. At that point, they still did not see a weapon. He did not reach for a weapon. So if he's not reaching, in my mind, he probably doesn't have a weapon, because I've already tased him and it's not working. He hasn't reached for anything, because if you tase someone and it doesn't work, He's either going to reach for what he has or he's going to attack you. He did neither one of those. He continues to walk away. They still should have used open hand control method at that point. Now, when he got to the vehicle and he refused to stop and he opened that door, yes, I would have wondered if he had a gun in that car. Yes, I would have. But the fact that there were three of us, well, at that point, I can't shoot because I haven't seen a weapon yet. We're not shooting at the man. We're going to either back off and take cover, or somebody else to get in their car and follow him if he gets in it and takes off. But we're not going to shoot the man because we don't know that there is a weapon. We haven't seen a weapon. If he makes it to the car, back off and take cover.
What I'm hearing you say is
that
you have to see a weapon before you can react as a police officer.
You should see something that appears to be a weapon, because sometimes if it's dark, it could be a cell phone. And that's what a lot of people need to understand. At nighttime, officers can't tell if that phone is a weapon. So don't pull out your phone quick when you're in a heightened situation with police officers. Because if you pull out that phone and it appears to be a weapon, they may just shoot you and be justified because they can't tell whether that phone is a weapon or not. So, again, they have to be able to see something, you know, or know that he's going for something. And in this case, I don't see that.
LaRonda Young is our guest here from Ha-Ha's to Ah-Ha's with Sybil Wilson, Stephen Hill. And LaRonda is a former police officer. She's been, you were a police officer for 12 years, I believe, is what they're telling us. And so let me just say this, LaRonda, just as a news update, the Department of Justice and some other information given out on Wednesday identified the police officer who shot Jacob Blake. It's taken them 4 days of protest to do that. The Department of Justice also announced several other details, including the fact that Blake had a knife and the others first used a stun gun on him. They say during the incident, the Department of Justice in a statement said that did not indicate why they attempted to stun him. However, the taser was not successful in stopping him. They also have said that Jacob admitted that he had a knife during the investigation, and agents recovered a knife from the driver's side floorboard of his car, but no other weapons were found.
Uh-oh.
Okay, that's
Uh-oh.
Different then. Now Uh-oh. We're looking at a totally different situation.
Uh-oh.
Because if you have an individual who has a weapon, which he did, you are engaging him, you are giving him commands, he is not responding, and he opens that car door, you might have a problem now. Now, there's a big if there, though. Was he walking with the knife in his hand and opened the car door, or was he reaching for the knife? Because if he already had the knife in his hand and opened the car door, he's still not a threat if he opened the car door and the knife is in the car. You can still back off. You can still back off. But if he was reaching in the car to get the knife, now you probably have a reason to shoot him because you don't know if he's going to turn it on you.
And that was my fear. When I've been the bad guy before. When I saw the video and I saw the way he opened the car, there's a way you go when you're going to reach into a car, and there's a way you're going to go when you get into a car.
Sure.
And everything that I saw was a reach. Just my opinion.
And he did look like he was reaching.
He looked like he was reaching, not getting.
So if he was reaching for that knife, then they're justified in shooting him because he did not follow any commands. He did not stop. They asked him to stop, and he still opened that door and reached for that knife. You cannot do that because the officers don't know if you're going to turn that knife on them or someone else, and their job is to protect everyone that's there. And it was already a domestic violence situation. The situation was already heightened. So if he reached for a knife, then that's a bad situation, and they're probably going to be justified in this shooting. If he was walking with the knife and already had it and opened the door, again, they could have pulled back on that. They could have pulled back.
But LaRonda, let me ask you this, because this is what I don't understand, and I've asked this question a number of times, and I don't know why I'm asking you, because I know what the answer is going to be. But is it always the officer's intention to shoot to kill and not shoot to wound? 7 to 8 times is just so ridiculous by this one cop. Do you shoot to kill or can you shoot to wound?
You're actually taught to shoot to stop the threat. That is what you're taught. And you're taught to shoot at center mass. Center mass is everything from the waist up and the neck down. That's what you're taught. You're not taught to wound. You're not taught to, you know, you're taught to shoot to stop the threat.
Right.
And your target is center mass. That's what your target is.
Can I ask, do you agree with that? And do you agree with that being the training? Because I've heard that over and over, that center mass is the target. You've got to do that, stop the threat. Is that the right way to do it, though?
I would say yes, and I'm going to tell you why. I would say yes because when you're in a situation where you have to fire your weapon, everything is moving so fast, you're taught to shoot at the largest piece of the target, which is center mass. Because if you do not, you're more likely to miss. And if that person turns on you, if you miss, that person can turn on you. So again, you're trying to stop the threat. So it's harder to shoot at a smaller target, like a leg or an arm, or, you know, when people are moving. You know, if you move your arm, someone shooting could very well miss your arm because it's so small. But center mass, you will hit your target. So that's why you're taught that, because you're being taught to stop the threat.
I got to admit, because there was so little information coming out of this. This is kind of like the biggest, it was my biggest fear, is that they're going to, is that it was, that, look, 7 to 8 shots is excessive. I'm sorry. As a layperson, it feels that way. Does it feel that way to you?
I agree. 7 to 8 shots is excessive. But I do have a question. Did all those shots come from one gun, or did those shots come from the 3 guns?
No, they
that
said.
Makes a difference.
The initial report is that the one cop shot.
Okay. Yeah, I believe that is excessive. 7 shots, I think it's excessive. But I also understand that when you're in a situation, if you are facing a weapon and you have to shoot someone, that you go into training mode and you just shoot until the threat stops. And if you shoot and they're still standing, you're probably going to shoot again until they fall, because you want to stop the threat.
LaRonda, have you been in a situation like that during your 12-year
career?
Where
I had to shoot someone?
To stop the threat, yes.
No, I've never had to fire my weapon, but I have been in a situation where I've had to pull my gun, and I started to pull the trigger, but he ended up complying and I was able to stop.
Oh, walk us through that. Oh, no, we're not taking the verse. You can't have the short version of that story, if you don't mind. No, because this is really, policemen are people too, and I think sometimes we forget that. And there's true reaction police have as well. So if you could walk us through your thought process when you were in this situation, it would help people understand, I think.
Well, in my situation, the gentleman, he did have a weapon. He was facing me. I told him to stop. He did stop, but he didn't drop the weapon. So at that point, my finger is on the trigger. I yelled another command. He dropped the weapon. So I didn't have to shoot him. Had he not dropped that weapon and continued to face me with the weapon after I gave him that command, I can guarantee you I would have taken the shot.
Curious, was it a gun, knife? What kind of weapon was it?
It was a gun.
And pointed or at the side, at his side.
It was at his side. It wasn't pointed, but I'm not going to give you a chance to point it at me if I can help it.
Right.
How close were you?
I'd say probably, I'd say maybe 10 feet away, because we were in a driveway.
And what were the conditions? Was it at night? Was it daylight?
No, it was broad daylight. Had it been at night, and I'm just guessing, had it been at night, I probably would have taken the shot faster than what I did. Because at night, you can't see.
LaRonda, before we leave, before we let you go, and I really appreciate your time and your insight, and I'm just going to take the initiative here to make you our official police person.
Yes, ma'am.
What would you like to leave with people who are listening today about this process, about the whole, because here's the other thing. Looking at Jacob's case and looking at Rayshard Brooks in Atlanta, here was a case where a young man, he obviously had been drinking, and they could have taken another way out with this. And this is where the whole defunding thing came from. What would you like people to know about the thought process or anything that we may have not given you the opportunity to say to people as we are going through yet another shooting?
Well, first of all, let me say that I am totally 100% against police brutality. Let me say that. And I have been very vocal over the years about police brutality and a lot of these killings that shouldn't have happened. One in particular, Tatiana Jefferson here in my hometown in Fort Worth, Texas.
Yes, ma'am.
So I want to say that first. But what I want to leave with people is because I've been on both sides of the fence, I have a little bit of understanding that other people don't. And the reality is, in most cases, these officers just want to go home to their families. Mm-hmm. And they don't know if you have a weapon. They don't know if you're going to kill them. They don't know if you're going to try to hurt them. So when you fail to comply with commands, that heightens everything 100%. So if you can comply. If they're wrong, let's comply so that you can go home and we can deal with the complaint later. But if you're not here, you can't fight that battle.
Holler.
Your job is to get home safe. That's safe.
Exactly.
Well, LaRonda, why'd you become a cop?
I have to laugh at that because, in all honesty, Sybil, it actually was a project for me. I was a 22-year-old college kid. They were hiring. I just applied to see what the process was about because I was a criminal justice major at the time, just trying to see what they go through to get hired. One thing led to another. I went through the review board. I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't even take it serious in the review board. I walked out, sat down for 15 minutes, and they came back and told me I had the job. And I had to make a decision. I had to make a decision because that was the summer before my senior year of college. Either take the job or drop out of college or stay in school. I thought about it for about a week because I only had 2 weeks to give them an answer. And I decided I would take it and go back to school later. And that's exactly what I did. I took the job, which I'm glad I did because the experience is something that I could have never imagined. I got a lot of experience that helps me just in, you know, just daily life. I mean, there's so much that I learned. I actually grew up more in my first year of police work than I did in the 3 years that I was in college. So, but that's really how it happened. And I went back to school later and finished up my degree.
Okay. So the flip side of that is, why did you quit?
I quit because of everything that you're seeing today. I got tired of fighting the battle on the inside as well as fighting. Let me say this, as a black officer, it is a balancing act because not only are you fighting on the inside, but then you're fighting your own people because they're thinking of you as a sellout and seeing you as a sellout when you're saying, no, I'm on the inside fighting battles that you don't even know about. If I wasn't doing what I was doing in this uniform every day when I walk in that office and have to check someone for saying the wrong thing or stopping someone that they shouldn't have stopped, it would be much worse than what you see today. Hmm. So I just decided, you know, I knew when I got the job, I didn't want to do it until I retired. My goal was to do 5 years and get out, which ended up being 12 and a half. But I ended up leaving. I got tired of it. I ended up leaving. And later on went into education, which is what I'm doing now. But I still have my foot in the door with law enforcement because now I'm teaching the community basically how to deal with law enforcement.
Wow. So, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, what a story. I feel a movie coming on.
So, yeah, I mean, I work with local law enforcement now to put things together to bridge that gap between the community and police. So that's kind of my goal. I want to bridge that gap. But police departments have got to take responsibility, mm-hmm. and they have got to hold their officers accountable. And I'll never stop saying that. They have got to hold them accountable. When they're wrong, be transparent, say they're wrong, and put, you know, give them the discipline that goes with the crime.
Oh, and please, oh, please, oh, please allow From Ha-Has to Ah-Has to be a mouthpiece, an amplifier for that message. Your number's burned into our Rolodex now. We understand police are people, right? And so, you know, mm-hmm. the split decisions, split moment decisions, but also part of a challenging, you know, system that it's great to hear people like you are working hard to call out and change. So fantastic.
Yeah, take our calls again, LaRonda, and don't make us have to hunt you down, okay? I'm just saying.
I won't. I'm here for you. Whatever you need.
LaRonda Young, you are delightful, right. And you are quite a woman. We thank you so much for your time and for your instruction. You really are an educator, and you've given us quite an education today. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, she coming back. She gonna be back. She gonna be back. She shouldn't have said that. I will say she shouldn't have said whatever you need me to do, because
whenever a woman says that to you, it's a wrap.
Okay, that's not where I was going. That's not where I was going. But yeah, I do like somebody who can pull out a weapon. Though, I ain't gonna lie.
I know that's right. Yeah. And she comes with her own handcuffs.
Yeah. Oh, sucky sucky. Now they don't have red fur around them like mine do. Listen,
I know.
what I really need to do is put out a hit. Well, it's an international case now. I really need to put out a hit on Tory Lanez. I need to bust a cap in Tory Lanez. I think he's a great performer. Enjoyed quarantine radio, but he's canceled. Now, I'm not part of cancel culture. I'm not. Right. I am not a canceled dude. Tory Lanez canceled. So Meg Thee Stallion, one of the coolest artists to come along in the last while, from Houston, Texas, Houston's own Meg Thee Stallion, who was all about, you know, women empowerment. Mm-hmm. She is currently one half of the duo in what is clearly our producer Chica's favorite song.
It's
can we get her to say the, what's the name of the song again, Chica?
I can't remember the name.
What's it called?
What is the song, Chica?
What's the name of the song?
What? And that stands for what?
What does it stand for?
Oh, wait. I think this additional year on her is made.
Oh. Chica? Oh.
Chica?
She didn't say it. Oh, all right. Fair enough. All right. Last week when she was 1 year younger, she was fine. But today's the birthday, so whatever. Anyhow, point being, Meg Thee Stallion, in a party somewhere in Hollywood Hills. Somehow there's a Jenner involved, and she has accused Tory Lanez of shooting her in the feet as she tried to get out of the car to leave the vehicle. What Meg Thee Stallion then did when the police showed up is like, I don't know who shot me. I don't think, because she didn't want the situation to turn into a Jacob Blake or whatever it is. We could, knowing that he had a gun and like a gun in the car was going to be a problem, but mostly for Tory, as she said. And then Tory kind of turned on her on social media. And so finally Meg's like, I wasn't going to say anything, but you shot me. The protection of Black women is for real, people. I'm like, I know. The protection of Black women is for real, and anybody who's going to come do something like that just deserves to be canceled. You're going to shoot somebody coming out of the car Why are you going to shoot a woman who's leaving your vehicle? I don't care. Alcohol, drugs, I don't care. I'm not saying that's it, but I don't care. We've got to be active in protecting our black women. Mm-hmm. Full stop at all points in time. And the only good thing to come out of this is people, a lot of people, including T.I., Bun B., Houston's another person from Houston, coming out and talking about like F. Tory Lanez. And I join that cacophony of people saying like you. But while saying F. Tory Lanez, it's like protect our black women right. as well. So super salute to Meg Thee Stallion, who really tried to protect a black man.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And in that. Anyhow. So that's
well, thank you for that. And I think that that is commendable to you and to the others that have stepped up and recognize about the protective nature. And so I thank you and for something very well said. Appreciate that. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. How you doing in this COVID thing? Just as we wrap up, you still good?
You know what? You know what else starts with a C besides COVID? Chica's got a birthday today. Chica, our producer, who's got a birthday today. I'm sorry, I don't want to divorce you. I'm doing fine. COVID's fine. Mm. We're fine. I'm fine. I've had it. I'm not going to get it again. I feel confident. I'm not going to.
Okay.
But it's Chica's birthday, though. That's the thing. Chica, you have COVID?
No, she has a cake, though.
Oh.
We're trying to cut into that.
No, just thanks. Look, the awesome and talented Chica has been here every week. Very Mr. Spock like. You know, sometimes she wants to tear our necks apart, off, but she acts like Mr. Spock like. And that's okay. We'll just come back in an hour and a half when you finish getting your mustache waxed, Stephen. That's perfectly fine.
Oh, she didn't say that to me, huh?
No issue. No issue. So much appreciated her work here. And I hope, you know, if we can ever say goodnight, she'll have a good time and have a great time on you know, wherever she plans on going. We're not going to pry, but I bet you wherever she's going is going to involve hearing that Cardi B, Meg Thee Stallion song.
I bet you.
And borrow some handcuffs from policewoman LaRonda. I'm hoping. I am really, really hoping.
Yo, Chica, it's your birthday. Yo, Chica, it's your birthday. One time for the birthday girl. Two time for the birthday girl. Three time for the birthday girl. One time for the birthday.
And with that, ladies and gentlemen.
It's your birthday. It's your birthday. Bury me inside the Louis store.
Woo! Yes.
I'm trying to do all the things that might be in her age demo that she might recognize. I believe I did a wonderful job. I ain't gonna lie to you.
I do too.
Chica, what are you like? You like, what hour are you? Like 20, 20, 20, 15, 22?
16, 20,
22? Hello? Yo, she's answering. She's so reticent to say this. Like she was reticent to say what WAP stands for. Right. That's those are in the two same category. Like I'm not saying how old I am and I'm not saying.
I'm 31.
And so what does WAP stand for?
Stands for wet ass pussy, because all y'all was...
Oh dear God.
I was not prepared.
I wasn't prepared the second time either.
Hold on. I'm gonna tell you right now, here's what's gonna happen. We're gonna play this back. I'm going to record this and I am going to loop that. I am going to loop the stance wet at.
And you know what?
Were you rocking your neck when you said that? Were you rocking your neck when you said that?
It was a little bit. It was hard to see, but I felt the rocking.
I felt it too.
And you know when I want you to play it back on the 31st birthday of her first child. That's what I want you to play.
This is how your mama spent a birthday. This is how your mama spent a birthday right now.
This is what she was listening to. This is what she was rocking to the night you were. Oh, never mind. Okay. All right.
We are out. Sybil, I love you.
I love you back. Have a great weekend. Tell people how they can subscribe.
Oh, you just go to Spotify, type in your name, and that's how it comes up?
Well, I was thinking Google, Apple, Spotify, and other platforms. Yeah, so.
From ha-has to ahas, get it, hit the subscribe button. But Sybil Wilkes' name comes up.
And Stephen Hill is a gospel singer. Christian. Sorry. Bye.